You're listening to SBS News.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 11th of February 2026, a day where the Australian share market rose 1.7%, the S&P ASX 200 having a great day, finishing at 9,014 points. We'll have the details with Luke Larratt from Seneca Financial Solutions in a few moments. But first to my interview with the bank CEO of the Commonwealth Bank, Matt Comyn. He says the disruptive potential of artificial intelligence should not be underestimated. That's as half-year cash profit at the bank hit $5.5 billion, up 6%, driven by a rise in deposits, business lending, and the benefits of low lending losses, meaning more borrowers meeting their mortgage repayments on time. While it will pay a higher interim dividend of $2.35 per share, increasing competition, especially from the likes of Macquarie, has seen its net interest margin shrink 4 basis points to 2.04%. Now, the majority of the Commonwealth Bank's $2.4 billion in investments has been on technology. It'll spend more than $1 billion this year protecting against economic crime, which includes cyber scams and fraud. So to tell us more about that and the bank's profit numbers, I spoke with its CEO, Matt Comyn. Matt, thanks for your time. In my experience, I know not to ask CEOs about the share price reaction to their profit results, but a jump of 8% today, the biggest since 2020. What do you take that to mean from your result and outlook?
Well, I think the first thing is we've seen in recent times that there is quite a bit of volatility in the market, so there does tend to be larger reactions than certainly perhaps in years gone by. Look, I think there's probably a sense of what the overall performance would be. I think what maybe surprised the market on from a positive perspective is just strong volume growth, loans and deposits across all of our businesses. Of course, the economic backdrop of particularly low unemployment meant there was very low loan impairment expense, so the profit was a bit higher than they were expecting. We were able to declare a fully franked dividend that was slightly above expectations at $2.35, and the market responded, and you're quite right, Ricardo. We spent all of our time focusing on the things that we can control. We're fortunate to serve and support more than 15 million Australians. Record numbers have chosen to bank with us during the period, and we just seek to do the best job we can serving them. And, of course, the business performance will follow that.
But what about competition? To what extent does it concern you, especially from the likes of Macquarie?
Look, I think competition overall is good. We see that as a source of innovation. I know it brings out the best in the team at the Commonwealth Bank. I mean, we offer a full-service banking offering to all Australians around the country. We have obviously great technology and a digital experience, but we also have the largest branch network. We've got more than double the number of ATMs. We compete with many other players who offer a much more limited service. But there has been competition, as you said, in a number of the businesses in which we operate. We've been able to compete effectively, hopefully do a very good job for all of our customers, and the financial performance over the 6 months reflected that.
So CBA is a leader when it comes to tech and investment in AI. How do you protect that lead from a disruptor that can take it all overnight? We saw recently US software shares smashed. Just yesterday, insurance companies took a hit because of a new AI tool that compares insurers using a large language model. So how do you make sure this sort of stuff doesn't happen to you?
Well, look, I think it's a really important technology, which, of course, I think we're still very early on in terms of the potential. As you said, we invest and have increased the investment in this 6 months on the prior corresponding period as in the year before, up 10%, so on track to well exceed $2 billion. Yeah, some proportion of that is specifically in AI. We're working with a number of partners. There's many parts of our customer experience now that we're already leveraging to improve that customer experience. I think the disruptive potential is not something that should be underestimated. I think it's our It's up to us to make sure that we're preparing and making sure that we're the organisation is in the best possible strategic position to be able to support our customers. I think that's important that we embrace the technology. I also think that's really important at a national level. You mentioned there's no, Australia obviously is remote geographically, but there's no ocean that is going to protect all Australian businesses, many of whom operate in, in global markets or certainly have global competitors. And so we're certainly learning and understanding. We're not complacent about any of the long-term strategic risks, but we also think that we have particular competitive advantages in and around brand. Trust is really important, use of that technology. But I do think we'll continue to see sort of uncertainty, volatility in markets as, the true disruptive potential and perhaps at times the risks of some of this technology emerge.
In your AI report, it said there was about $900 million spent last year on AI to target fraud against the retail bank. You're also investing a lot of money in IT, AI training and cybersecurity for staff. How do you reconcile the logic of spending all that money, and are you starting to see any financial benefits from those investments?
Yeah, look, so across the, let's call it $2.3, $2.4 billion of total investment spend, the vast majority of that is in technology. It's not $1 billion per se or $900 million on AI. That's actually in an area that we refer to as economic crime. So it's financial crime, protecting our customers and the community, cyber scams, frauds, one of the biggest issues facing economies around the world. We'll spend probably more than $1 billion this financial year to 30 June in that particular area. Some part of that absolutely is leveraging some of the AI to both monitor in real time and respond to particular threats, but whether that be a cyber threat, whether that's a particular fraud pattern that we're seeing and being able to deploy in real time in ways that we can actually interrupt and alert customers, also to patch some of the technologies that we're using. So I think the reality for many companies, certainly enterprises, is that there's a lot of investment that's required to be able to protect both your company and your customers. And then there's additional investments in terms of how do you improve the customer experience, the digital experience, how do you make, in our case, application processes, how do you make it easier for people to make payments or to be able to borrow money, not relaxing the standards, but just making that much easier for our customers. Of course, there needs to be benefits. I think with any new technology, initially it's higher cost, and then over time, certainly in our experience, we're starting to see some clear benefits come through. But I wouldn't overstate, because I think at times the impact on the labour market is overstated. I've sort of finished last calendar year, much less convinced about the labour force disruption than I started the calendar year, and that would have been after spending hundreds of hours trying to better understand it. I think it's going to impact different parts of the economy, the labour market, industries quite unevenly. But there's no question that in 2026, there'll be a number of different breakthroughs around the world. And I think it's really important from a policy perspective that Australia is able to appropriately adopt and embrace. And one of the reasons why we released that report is we want to be very clear and engage with our stakeholders and the community about what we're doing, why, how we're managing the risks, how we govern it, how we think about transparency and explainability.
We also heard today from the Deputy RBA Governor, who said raising Australia's sustainable growth rate is the nation's biggest single issue in the medium term. He added it will require a lift in productivity, which needs action from both government and industry. Your recent AI report claimed AI could add $115 billion annually to the Australian economy by 2030, mainly through productivity improvements. So, with all that background, what do you see as the biggest barrier to achieving that?
Well, first of all, I completely agree with the Governor's comments. I do think absolutely lifting productivity will enable us to, as a nation, grow at a higher level and, of course, then sustain improvements in living standards. Look, I think with any technology, it's important that businesses, large and small, are able to adopt that. I think there's, important things that you need to do, certainly from our perspective, to build those capabilities inside companies to make sure that we're providing the appropriate controls and management of some of the risks, and as I said, sort of transparency and explainability. But I do think it's an important technology. There is a role for businesses to be prepared to invest and take advantage of that. I think it's going to produce both, more output, certainly per unit of input in many different businesses, but I also think we'll be able to use it to improve, in our case, obviously, experience with financial institutions. There's lots of opportunities in broader research, pretty much all aspects of the economy. And so I think having the right policy settings, which obviously the government's put a lot of thought into, from our perspective, we're investing a lot in building capability internally. We've made a commitment to try and help a million of our small businesses learn more about AI, learn from us and learn from some of our partners about what we're doing, why, what's working, what are some of the things that we're finding difficult. And hopefully, collectively with all of those things in place, we'll be able to be, one of the countries that's leading with the adoption. And that's where the benefits from technology really flow. It's from the adoption.
My interview with Matt Common, the CEO of the Commonwealth Bank, continues. Your data shows household spending rose across all age cohorts last year, especially for essentials. But what I found interesting is that discretionary spend for those 34 years and under is up compared with the same time a year ago, but down just a touch for those 35 and older. What do you think that says about the economy?
Well, I think we're starting to see maybe it's a slightly more even pattern. Obviously, when rates were like at their peak, that was tending to impact and disadvantage younger customers. Some of those either were feeling the pressures through rental costs or housing costs. Obviously, typically older in life, there's far less or no debt, so taking advantage of higher rates in the form of higher interest that's being paid. And so, I do think this is important alongside getting inflation down, boosting productivity, is trying to really think through intergenerational equity. And again, I think we've got to make sure that, future generations of Australians have access to the same sorts of opportunities that we've all had, owning a home and being able to, participate in the economic growth that hopefully we can create in Australia.
Finally, the economic environment has shifted, though. Interest rates rose in February, and now there's the prospect of another one later this year. I think economists at CBA expect another one in May. How will your customers cope?
Well, what we're seeing in our data, certainly to 31 December 2025, is that a very, very small proportion of customers are really in financial distress as it relates to not being able to make their repayments. It's not that they aren't feeling any pressures. As we go into the start of this year, we touched on the importance of productivity. That's the lower growth in productivity is actually really causing some capacity constraints in the economy. It led to inflation. It's led to an interest rate rise. That's where there's a disconnect insofar as we don't see it clearly in any of the data that we release. But clearly, I think that's weighing on people's minds, on sentiment. It's probably leading to some frustration. As you mentioned, we see one more rate hike. We don't think there'll be any more that will be necessary after that. But I think more broadly, getting productivity, getting a higher economic growth rate, continuing to see what we've been able to benefit from over many decades in Australia, which has been a stronger growth profile certainly than many other regions of the developed world. And I think if we can address some of those policy issues, then it should put the economy in a good footing, which is, of course, part of our job to be supporting and allocating capital to facilitate and promote economic growth.
That is Matt Common there, the CEO of the Commonwealth Bank. Let's now take a look at the Australian share market, which rose today. The S&P ASX 200 up 1.7%. The Commonwealth Bank having a lot to do with it. The shares in the bank are up by about 6.8% at the close. Doing best today, though, Aussie Broadband, 14% stronger. AGL Energy also having a great day, shares up by almost 12%. And James Hardie, a big performer, up by 11%. The worst performer on the ASX 200, extending on a fall yesterday, is biotech company CSL. Shares in the company, which was once Australia's largest listed firm, firm, tumbling another 11% today following some profit results, which we'll tell you about in a few moments with Luke Larative, the CEO of Seneca Financial Solutions. Luke, let's start with Commonwealth Bank, a $5.4 billion half-year cash profit. It's been applauded by the market. Its shares surging the most in 5 years. What's your take and why do you think investors have welcomed it?
Yeah, 5% ahead of consensus on a headline kind of basis. But if we look at it on a sort of pre-provisions operating profit basis, which is probably a better reflection of the core business, it was only about 2.5% ahead of consensus. So I think the market's getting a little bit carried away, pushing the stock up 7 or 8% today. It actually missed expectations on the sort of critical net interest margin line as well. So probably not as stoked and pumped about this result as the rest of the market is personally. But, you know, it's a big way in the index, driving the market up more broadly, and pretty positive sentiment for the other three banks as well. So certainly some good read through, I suppose, going through the slides.
The fact that the banks are doing well right now, what does it say about the way you think that they're operating in this environment that we're starting to see higher interest rates though?
If you break down the CBA result and sort of go into it in a little bit more detail, you can actually see kind of quite clearly what's happening. You know, you've got a 5% headline profit number that's gone up, but only a 2.5% pre-provision line. So 50% of the beat, of the earnings beat, has come from just reduced provisions. They're just saying that the credit environment's benign, people are paying their mortgages, they're not having any bad debts. And so they're able to reduce the essentially the cash they've got to hold aside for the event that people don't pay them back. So that's not what we would call like a high quality beat. It's not that CBA's revenue line is, you know, growing 10% per annum, or, you know, that the economy is booming. When we know the economy is not booming, we know that cost of living pressures are hard. We understand that, you know, Macquarie's making significant inroads into the mortgage market. Like, these are all known factors. What really here is we're seeing, you know, reduced provisioning and a benign kind of bad debt environment that I suppose is driving profits here. And as you so rightly point out, with interest rates going up, maybe that debt environment might not be as benign going into the future. And I suppose, you know, typically with rising rates, you're going to see margins at banks getting compressed. So you've already seen margins get compressed at CBA. They're down below consensus. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, over the next 6 or 12 months, we see further margin compression, maybe some increases in bad debts, and, you know, provisioning has got to go up again. And all of a sudden, we're kind of on the other side of this coin. So I definitely wouldn't be getting too carried away with CBA on the current valuation, and certainly cautious of investing in, you know, banks and financials more broadly in a rising interest rate environment. I mean, if we're in neutral rates, different story. But I think if your view is rising rates and going higher, I would be getting into some more pro-cyclical names rather than the banks.
CSL, that's another interesting one today. Shares absolutely smashed. Its CEO, Paul McKenzie, abruptly retired at the market close yesterday. Today, it posted an 81% fall in half-year profit, including restructuring costs. It's undergoing a huge transformation. A spin-off of its US business was abandoned last year. Its share price down around 40% over the past year. What exactly went wrong for what was once one of Australia's largest listed companies, and where to now for it?
Yeah, it's bleak, mate. The last thing you want to see is a 5 o'clock CEO resignation of an ASX 5 company. So, you know, the result the following day is not going to be too crash hot. Look, profit was down 5% below consensus, but it's really the guidance that's the issue here. Management is still kind of reiterating an FY26 guidance that they implied sort of at the previous result, which is sort of going to be a big back half of the year, sort of 13% acceleration in profits from here. And that's against a backdrop of increasing headwinds, particularly from generic competition at Vifor. So, you know, with the CEO going out, investors are going to be spooked. And the worry here now is that there's a few more skeletons still in the closet, and that the new management team, whenever they kind of get together, the new CEO and gets together, they're going to be pulling those skeletons out of the closet and giving more earnings surprise for investors. So, not a good situation for CSL, and that business is not in a good shape at the moment.
So with reporting season really kicking off now, CBA, probably one of the most interesting ones this season anyway, what kinds of trends are you expecting to see? And were there any others that caught your interest today?
Yeah, I think there's probably two components to reporting season that are of most interest to us at Seneca. I suppose that's sort of A is confirmation around these software names. Is AI going to be disrupting them or not disrupting them? You know, the ASX tech 200 tech sector is off about 45% from its high leading into reporting season. So there's clearly some opportunities there to buy some stocks at reasonable prices. The question is are we going to be able to get that earnings number right or are we going to be buying a bit of a falling knife? The other part is kind of the mining and resources sector, which has seen, you know, strong commodity prices over the last half, really, across the complex. And that's going to see some strong cash flow from some of these mining names. So we're expecting sort of some capital management initiatives across that sector, whether that's buybacks or increased dividends, as well as the potential for some M&A.
Okay, still with reporting season starting, we've got an environment of higher interest rates. The ASX is still climbing. It's near 9,000 points for the ASX 200. So how would you describe investor sentiment at the moment?
It's relentless by the dip. It's probably the quickest and easiest way I can describe it. Really, any bearishness does not seem to last long. And, you know, we think investors are kind of getting overly exuberant about buying gold, silver stocks late last year. And by the same token now, some of them are getting excessively bearish about tech stocks and AI fears at the moment. So despite kind of, you know, little sector movements here and there, kind of in the aggregate, people just seem to be buying the dip, and any time the market falls, you know, 5%, it sort of quickly rallies again. So whilst we're probably still in a bit of negative territory this month, you know, to date, I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of February, you know, we're 5 or 10% higher.
And finally, what are you telling your clients right now? Where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Trying to avoid getting caught up in the narrative, Ricardo. I think there's a lot of news at the moment, a lot of headlines, a lot of clickbait. And, you know, we just kind of want to have a rigorous, repeatable investment process, kind of uncover value in any market conditions and not do anything special or unusual. I think there's value in these pro-cyclical commodity names. There's value in some of these oversold technology names. And there's kind of a dozen or so other sort of special opportunities in the market where we see, you know, potential for our performance, for our portfolios. So I think just stick to the process and try and avoid the noise as best we can.